You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid. Why so? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. And you fry some garlic. It's and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Mastitos, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? What a weekend, huh? It's so warm. And I think, I'm pretty sure this now qualifies as a legitimate Indian summer. As soon as we get a heat wave in September, people start saying, oh yeah, Indian summer. But Indian summer doesn't happen until there's been a frost. So it's a heat wave after, I think, the first frost, in which case we certainly had them in Sebastopol, I think about 10 days ago, maybe a little bit less. So I think this qualifies as Indian summer. Daylight savings is finally over. I wish they'd go back to early October as the end of it. I just think it's really weird in November, and by the time it finally ends, I'm so ready for it. And partly because that shortening of days calls to mind several things in an almost visceral, physical way that are going to happen with the end of the long days of summer, which we like so much. But one of the things that happens is everything's getting a little colder. It's almost crab season. And Dungeness crab season is, I think, one of the great pleasures of living along the Pacific coast. Here in Sonoma County, it opens officially, commercially, tomorrow, November 15th. And we have here my personal fishmonger, Dave LeGros. Dave, I don't think I buy fish from anybody else these days since you've been such a regular at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. Welcome to Mouthful.
Well, thanks. Glad to be here.
I should also say that we have two topics tonight, not just Dungeness crab and fishing, but also newish vinegar, Vivo vinegar, produced in Sonoma County. We have John Troll.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Really glad you are. And I'm sitting like several feet away from you, and that is some aromatic vinegar.
Thank you.
So I think what we're going to do first is talk about fishing, and particularly as it relates to crab, because I think as a fisherman you wear many hats.
Well, yes, I do fish for crab. I mainly fish for salmon, which has been depleted the last 3 years. But now we're doing the crab, and I think the weather is up right now. 25 to 30 knots.
Weather, when you say the weather's up, that means the surface
seas
up,
are up.
The wind is
10
up.
10-foot seas. Uh-huh. We've got a lot of wind, so it'll keep the medium-sized and smaller boats in. I think some of the big boats will go out and drop their pots, and they'll have crabs. But us little guys will have to wait for the weather to slow down a little bit, maybe Wednesday, what they're predicting.
Mm-hmm. And when you say the bigger guys, what does that mean? And so, first of all, a crab pot is like a big basket, right?
Yeah, the average 90 pounds. And the bit larger boats will have like up to 300 pots. And there's some super big boats that will come down from the north, and even local boats that have up to 1,000 pots. And they'll work day and night, four or five crew members, Historically, the crabs are abundant the first week or so mm-hmm. of the season. And then, of course, they're depleted. And a lot of boats will come down from Washington and Oregon, large boats with big crews, and they'll fish here, and their season doesn't start up north until the 1st of December.
So can anyone come and fish in the waters off Bodega?
Well, they have to have a California permit,
okay.
fishing game permit, and that's... But a lot of the boats have had them for years. Uh-huh. And they have Wiggins, a representative from California, has had a committee, fishing council committee kind of thing, that have been working on limiting the number of crab pots. And but there's nothing solid yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still...
Do you think that would be, as a fisherman, do you think that would be a good idea?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Because the big boats, there's been some problems with large boats coming down in the local waters. You know, it's just sort of a territorial thing.
Uh-huh. So how big is your boat? How many crab pots can you take out?
I have a mini boat. I have a 25-footer. Basically, it's a salmon troller. I'll work just
What's
about...
What's its name?
The fishing vessel Bumblebee.
Bumblebee, okay.
Bumblebee, yes. And I'm a small-time fisherman. I fish about 50 pots. At one time, I had 125, but I've you lose a lot of pots. You lose about 10% a year.
And what's the loss... From do people steal them? Do they float out
they
to
don't
Japan?
They will get adrift. You get big seas and they'll lift them. Sometimes they'll lift uh-huh. the buoys and run them. I fish a smaller pot, so they do tend to roll a little bit. The big 90 pounders they don't roll too much, but mm-hmm. And there are some thievers out here. It's pretty unregulated on the coast here. There's a lot of pirate crab pirates. Yeah, you see a lot of people going out sport boats with five guys on the boat. And a crab puller, but no crab pots. An amazing thing. And they come back with limits. It's the darndest thing you ever saw. So there is a lot of thievery.
Uh-huh. So you think you're probably going to be going out. And so you have to go out. What's the process? You have to get your boat, your pots cleaned up from last year, I guess.
Right.
Get them out of storage.
The pots are basically rubber-wrapped rebar. And it does wear, and you have to put new straps on it and get the lids so they have the proper straps, and the buoys are cleaned up and recognizable. You need to have a fishing game number on the float to be recognized. It is a crime to tamper with a commercial pot. And this year, they actually have, last year or so, they've had actually a law that makes it a misdemeanor to mess with a sport pot.
Oh.
So there are some laws out there, but there's not much teeth in them.
Not a lot of enforcement.
Not much enforced.
Yeah.
Not enforced too
yeah.
much.
So you take them out, and then you just drop them, and they're held in place by the buoy?
Well, the pot will stay on the ground, and you have ground bars on the bottom of the pots, and they'll keep them so they are aimed towards the bottom. They don't roll over. In other words, they land mm-hmm. straight up and down, and they ground because the ocean has an action with the salt water that will wear down metal. And eat it up,
mm-hmm.
Corrosive kind of a process. And it actually repels the crabs, too, they found. So they have zincs on the pots to keep the electrolytic action down. And then now they're starting to experiment with different textured materials for the entrances of the pots. So it's an ongoing process to get the little crabs to come in the pot.
Yeah, and how do you encourage them to go in?
Well, you put a lot of bait in there.
Oh, okay, and what's
the
bait?
Well, we use mackerel and squid, and usually you put a hanging bait in, a carcass of a cod that's been filleted, and that'll keep them in there hanging and eating something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But the sweet squid is good. They use mackerel, sardines. Now they're starting to use some chicken, I understand. A lot of fishermen, and anything that's cheap, the fishermen
uh-huh.
will use.
Yeah.
At times they've experimented with some leather things that have, it's product of beef, the skin that some purveyors were trying to sell. And it lasted longer and fished longer, so we were interested in it. But it came and went.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the fish, the crabs are cyclical. And this year here is going to be a good year, supposedly.
Yeah, that's what I've been reading.
Yeah. We've had our bad years.
Yeah.
And they say it goes in 7 to 10 year cycles. I started fishing in 74. And it was a very bad year. In fact, it was so bad that we backed I worked for Paul Waddell. He was a well-known and a great fisherman from Bodega Bay that recently passed away. And we worked on his boat. He basically backed his boat up to the dock there, and we sold him off the boat at one point. So it was such a bad year.
Mm-hmm. And then when was your first good year? Do you remember?
Well, in 2000, when I really started doing a lot more crabbing, 2001, 2002, they were pretty good years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started withering away.
Yeah.
And last year was, you know, fair. The year before that was not good at all.
Right, and I remember that.
We had the Busan spill, the oil spill that happened a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's right.
And that tainted, of course, we had bad years on top of that. We've had some job actions through the years over price.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it goes like this. If there's few crabs, the price is high. If there's a lot of crabs, the price is low. This year it looks like the price is going to be lower because there's a lot of crab.
So it does look like a lot of crab at a good size.
Right. And, of course, locally it's hard for a little guy like me to compete with the bigger guys because G&G will sell crab at $279, $299, not less a pound. And, you know, so you can't sell
them
on the
street. You're paying $5 to $6 for a crab at that point.
Yeah, exactly. There are guys that sell them off their boats. Most of the fishermen, because of the quantity of crabs they have to catch to make a living, they need to sell them to a wholesaler.
Mm-hmm.
And they're beholden to the company store. They'll have to pay. They'll have to get, this year I think they're getting $1.60. Last year it started $2 or so and went up. And at the
end, I just read $1.75 they agreed on like a couple days ago.
Okay, then it's right. That's sort of low. But then again, if there's a lot of crabs, it's good.
Yeah.
Because they have a ready sale of a place to sell them.
Mm-hmm. And then where do you sell your catch?
Well, I have most of mine at the farmers markets.
Okay. Because you do sell also to certain restaurants, right?
I do sell. I haul Gulf shrimp for
yes.
you and Jimmy. And Gulf
absolutely.
Fish. And on Tuesdays and Fridays, I go to all the nice restaurants in Yountville and Napa and St. Helena and Calistoga. Walk in the back door and deliver.
So you do the Highway 29.
Yeah, get to smell all the great smells and see all the frenzied chefs working away in their kitchens. Uh-huh. Sort of cool.
Yeah. And then you also go to the farmer's market. You go. I know you go to Sebastopol. You also go to Healdsburg?
Healdsburg and Sebastopol are two markets that I do.
Uh-huh.
Been doing those for about 8 years.
Uh-huh. Back to dropping the crab pots. So you take the crab pots and you put them down.
Yes.
When do you go back and check?
Well, it's a numbers game. I mean, the first day you're going to check them like 24 hours later.
So you go 24 hours later.
Because there's going to be they're going to stuff them the first day.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, maybe it's 2 days, and then you might go, you know, 3 or 4. You want to make it practical. And the bait will fish for, well, you know, a squid will fish for 3 days or so, and a mackerel maybe a little longer.
Uh-huh.
So your fish is basically not going to fish after 4 or 5 days, a pot.
So once the crab goes into the pot, it can't get out, right?
Well, they're pretty voracious. They're pretty. They move around a lot. They do get out, but basically they don't. They don't get out of the pot.
Do they have, while they're down there waiting, you know, for their fate, are there any sea predators that come and get them?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Who wants them?
Well, I've taken out 50, 60-pound octopus out of pots
before. Yeah, I've read about the octopus. Yeah,
in fact, I sold one to the Steinhardt Aquarium years ago.
Really?
Yeah. It was a 50-pounder. And then you get, if you depend on what you put in, I found years ago we were putting salmon carcasses in the pots, and the seals would go down and bust them.
The seals will go down that deep.
Oh, yeah. But that's not a big problem.
Uh-huh.
You'll find different, you'll find shrimp in them sometimes. They'll come up a few handfuls of shrimp.
Uh-huh.
And you'll get a ling cod occasionally that'll get in there. And of course, there won't be any crabs when there's a ling cod in it. They'll all be in the ling crab's belly.
Oh, really? The ling cod will eat the crab.
And then if you leave your pots out there, say you have seas for 2 or 3 weeks, we've had before here, mm-hmm. where we've had, you know, you can't get out to your pots for a couple of weeks, the crabs will eat the big ones, will eat the little ones. Sometimes you go in there and just find a bunch of shells and one big, fat, smiling crab in there, you know.
So. Interesting. Well, I was going to say, what else do they eat? So
yeah,
now we know.
They eat themselves, yeah.
What do you think you'll be selling? I mean, maybe this is premature. What sort of price do you anticipate for a crab?
I was going to, because of my clientele, and I have a certain, you know, they come every week, my wonderful clientele, I was going to sell them by the crab.
Oh, by the
crab. And I'll cook some and I'll sell some alive.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to do a little crack, and I was going to try and get my kids, who are hopefully are listening, to come help me crack crabs on Saturday and Sunday.
Tell us how you like to cook them. And that was well, great. I'm going
to
get you.
Yeah, well, you have really to a lot of salt. There's the best cooked crabs are cooked in seawater, which has a high amount of salt in it.
You know, I wrote about that once, about somebody who was cooking their crabs in seawater before they sold them, and the health department closed them down, said it was illegal to cook them.
There's always that problem.
So I didn't know that. Do you know why?
Why would the health department
close
them
down? Why is
that
a problem? Do you know?
Well, because of the sanity of the water, I guess. They're
it's the ocean.
They also, the health department wants you to cook the crab, I think, 17 minutes, which basically cooks the fat out of the crab.
Health department says how long you have to cook the crab?
Sure. That's what I understand. A friend of mine does a lot of crab feeds, and he was telling me that now I cook them about 12. You know, it's pretty relative, because if you heat your water up and you throw your crabs in, well, they're technically cooking while the water's reheating to boil.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my old-timer friends will cook them for 12 minutes when they reboil.
Yeah.
So the crab meat is going to cook in 12 minutes. Where it cooks the fat out and a lot of the taste.
Yeah, that's what I... 12 minutes for the average crab. I'm just working on... I'm doing a blog post on the Eat This Now blog, and I'm doing my how to cook live crab. And, you know, the really super huge ones, you can go up maximum 16 minutes if you're going to just eat them chilled right away.
Yeah.
But 12 minutes is perfect.
To replicate the salt water, just put an awful lot of salt in there.
Yeah, I put in a quarter cup per gallon. What do you...
That's probably good.
Okay. Yeah. Do you put them in? Now, are you of the mind that it is more humane to plunge them mouth first into already boiling water, or to put them into cool water and bring it up slowly?
I think that's torture.
The slowly?
By the Geneva Conference, but to put them in there slow.
I agree. I agree. But there are advocates of that.
Quick and dirty.
Yeah,
you know.
That's what I think. That's what
you
I
can't hear them scream then.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, you have to put them in and then go outside for half an
hour.
Right,
that's right.
Yeah. How do you like to eat crab?
I tell you, it's just good with butter and bread. Mm-hmm. You know, or make a Louis, you know, do some asparagus and a
Have I given you my Louis dressing yet?
No.
I will bring you some Louis dressing to celebrate the first crab. Yeah. I think my Louis dressing is the best in the world.
Yeah.
But then I think anyone who really makes Louis dressing probably feels that way about
theirs.
I'll
change it by tartare recipe.
Sounds good.
Secret recipe.
Sounds good. We're going to take a little musical interlude here, and we'll be right back with more talk about fishing and, coming up very soon, vinegar. It's almost time for the seasonal catch, Dungeness crab, just in time for Thanksgiving. You know, definitely a reason to be grateful. Dungeness crab. I don't know. I've eaten crab, stone crab in Florida. Finally ate blue crab from the Chesapeake Bay. I don't know if it was just me or what, but, you know, for years I heard fabulous blue crab, and it just tasted like the seasoning.
Well, you know, we're spoiled with Dungeness because they're so meaty and
they're
so easy to break open and so easy to clean. And you get those little dinky blue crabs.
Those little blue
crabs. And it takes
they taste like Old Bay seasoning.
Yeah.
And you have to pick through tons of shells to get a mouthful.
I have no patience for that.
No. And Dungeness crab. And I fished, or I pulled out of the trap king crab up in Olga Bay.
No, those are meaty. Those are
definitely meaty. And when I was up on a press tour, they brought one writer up in 2 years, and for some reason they invited me, and it's Kodiak Island, and you know, had to take a little bush plane to Olga Bay, no, to Alatak Bay, and then go by boat, skiff, up through three or four other bays. It was a salmon camp, but everybody who lives there gets their subsistence allowance, and the family I was staying with got three king crab a year, and to welcome me they had two. They trapped two, and they showed me what to do, and I stood there, I put my cowboy boots. They're on the sand. And I travel in cowboy boots because they're so easy to get on and off. And put my cowboy boots on the bottom claws and my hands on the top claws and just snapped it. And it made them like me. And then they cooked it up. We were eating it like half an hour later.
It's amazing fish. It's also pretty expensive.
Yeah. It's good, but you know what? It's not as good as Dungeness.
No.
I just think Dungeness is the best crab. I've also eaten crab in Malaysia.
And old-timers will tell you that the crabs from the Bay Area, and don't know what it's due to. It's something in the ocean floor, what they feed on, or the the whatever the heck it is down in the ocean, that they are tastier here than they are getting further north. A lot of people can tell Washington crab when they eat them.
Yeah. I haven't had enough Washington crab.
You probably get a lot of calls from Washington caller.
But, you know, I know our Bay Area. I've been eating Bay Area Dungeness crab since I was, well, I first remember it when I was four.
Yeah.
One of my favorite field trips with my mother was to go to Fisherman's Wharf, and back then I think that they, a lot were from here at the right time of year. But,
well, Guy Fieri from the Food Channel and the local chef has been, and personality has been, he really trumpets the local Dungeness crab.
Yeah, there's just nothing like it.
Yeah.
Nothing like it. And, if you decide that you want to cook it yourself this year and you want to know how to handle it, the blog post at Eat This Now should be up. Let's see, it's Sunday. It'll be up by tomorrow, sometime tomorrow. So I'll have all the instructions, and I'm going to give a list of places to shop for it as well. I always think it's really fun to go out to the coast. You know, if you can, go buy it off the boat.
Well, my friend Sam Garcia, he sells it right there at Puerto Bodega, right at the corner there. He'll be selling
Sam Garcia?
Crabs. Yeah, Sam Garcia. He sells.
And how do you find him? Does he have...
You can't miss it. Just it's right across where the Sandpiper used to be.
Okay. And is it his name, or is it a different
name? Yeah, you'll see around the corner. It'll have a sign.
Correct. Sam Garcia.
He sells
it
off his boat.
So. Cool. Yeah, I think it's the Robert Trawl I sometimes go to.
Yeah.
With the Anellos.
That's Steve Anello's boat.
Yeah, Steve Anello.
Tony has a little...
He has the crab
market
shot.
There. Yeah. Crab shot. He has a great chatter there. Almost as good as mine.
Almost as good as mine.
Of course, they get the awards every year. I don't.
Well, that's because you're not out there serving
right,
10 gallons.
Right.
Well, I want to talk some more about the other things you fish and what you do and a little bit about Gulf Seafood, but let's bring John in. You're just so quiet and patient over there, John. Tell us when you started Viva Vinegar Company.
Started about 2.5 years ago in the summer of 2008. And my son, who's a home winemaker, and a good friend of his from high school, Tom Knapp, make wine up in Geyserville in Tommy's barn. And so they've been doing that probably for 10 years. It's just homemade wine, and it's really good. And my son came to me and said, Dad, why don't we start a winery? And I suggested that there might be a little competition out there. So
just a bit.
Maybe we should look around and see another way we could work in that field. So we did a lot of research and came up with the idea of producing Orléans-style wine vinegar.
Uh-huh. And you should probably explain Orléans-style.
It's a 200-year-old method of making wine vinegar. And what you do is you take a 60-gallon barrel, put holes at either end, put gauze over the holes, and let the air pass over the wine, fill the barrel about half full, and you start with a mother of vinegar, which is passed on from generation to generation often. And we purchased a really good mother.
Who'd you purchase from?
We got it over in St. Helena, and I can't remember the name of the place, but it was... we were told it was a 400-year-old mother. And so we have had great success with it, and we started with a Syrah wine vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And we were new at it. We just were hoping that it would all turn out. And as time went on, we thought we might enter our vinegars in the Sonoma County Harvest Fair, and we did, and one gold, a silver, and a bronze with our fresh out of the chutes with our varieties of vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
So we were really excited about proceeding further in the business. Mm-hmm. It takes about a year for the wine to convert to.
So do you make the wine and then make the vinegar?
No, we actually
buy
wine in barrels and then we follow that process and convert it.
So you're making Syrah and what else?
We're making Syrah. We have a Pinot Noir. We have a Cabernet. We have a Merlot. And the Merlot won at the Sonoma County Harvest Fair this year, Best of Show.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I say that you've brought everything we need to taste.
Yeah, well, I brought three of our gold medal winners.
Okay. Did you bring the Pinot Noir?
Might be fun. I didn't. Oh. I'm sorry. But I brought the Syrah and the Sauvignon Blanc and the Merlot.
Okay. Now, remember when I wrote a book, my second book was about oil and vinegar. And when I was interviewing Daryl Cordy, from Cordy Brothers,
right.
He was talking about, I wanted to hear his thoughts about vinegar. And he said, the only varietal that maintained varietal character, true varietal character, was Pinot Noir. And I just always remembered that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I don't know if I agree with that, but I sort of like to believe it because, you know, I like to believe all kinds of mysterious things about Pinot Noir.
Well, vinegar is mysterious.
Yes.
And actually, the way it came out for us is we feel like we got the original varietal grape in the ones that we've made. And I think it's the method.
Mm-hmm. It's a very gentle method.
It's a very slow and gentle method.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and some of the things I do to turn wine or whatever liquid into vinegar go so quickly.
Exactly. The 90% of commercial wine vinegar is made acetator style, where it's force heated and force aerated, and it generally produces about a 5% acid vinegar.
Uh-huh. What sort of percentage do you get?
We target coming in at around 6%.
6%. That's a good one. 6% is good.
Right, and it seems to pleases the people who do the tastings at our farmers markets.
So, do you want to give us a taste and guide us through it?
Absolutely. You know, I thought I would first, one of my favorite ways to use the Syrah wine vinegar is with an avocado. So I just cut the avocado in half, took the pit out, and I take the fork and I poke it around in here. And
so you poke it down into the flesh.
Right. So, poke it into the flesh, and then I pour the Syrah wine vinegar in here. And then...
You know something? You could go one step further with this.
Okay.
After we tasted it, you could, theoretically, then on top of the avocado that has been saturated with the vinegar, drop in some Dungeness crab. And I bet that would be really good.
Yes.
I had a problem here, though. You know, he called that agent the mother agent, and it's 400 years old. It has to be called a grandmother or a great-grandmother. I mean, that's
right.
Mother agent.
Uh-huh. Just... I don't know if they do carbon dating to verify.
Really?
Okay, so I'm going to take... This is quite a taste here.
It's alive, too.
That's a very nice combination. And it's not overwhelmingly acidic.
Right. Right. And you have, of course, the avocado oil in there, so you don't need to add olive oil. And I do this often.
That's
avocado season.
That's really nice, and it would actually welcome some crab.
Right.
When you have some crab over.
And another way I like to use it is in a salad every day, and usually I work out with a couple of buddies, and then we go and get lunch. We sit outside of Big John's in Healdsburg, And we get salads, and then we put the
bring your own vinegar.
Olive oil and vinegar. Yeah, we bring our own.
Uh-huh.
And I put the Vivo bottles up there so everybody can see,
because
it's offered at Big John's.
Little.
And so I brought a little salad.
Okay, now when people are sampling, for example, at your booth, and I should say that you're at a lot of farmers markets. I think
right.
I've seen you in Sebastopol, Hillsburg, and Santa Rosa.
That's right.
Okay, yes.
And Sonoma.
And Sonoma, okay. Uh-huh. I don't get over there quite so often. Do you use the sugar cube method?
I do.
Okay.
I use that frequently, and part of the reason I use the sugar cube method is it's the way the professional wine vinegar tasters mm-hmm. Taste wine vinegar. And mm-hmm. the problem in wine vinegar tasting is the acid will destroy your palate.
Yeah, your palate will shut down after
right.
about three tastes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah. when you use the sugar, it reduces the acidity enough
right.
that you can actually get the flavor
yeah.
of the grape.
Yeah, and you can just, what you should do if you want to try this at home, and it's really easy, but if you can get Domino brand sugar cubes rather than C&H brand. C&H brand, the sugar dissolves really quickly,
exactly.
which is a benefit if you're right. drinking coffee or tea. But if you get the Domino, which are, you know, those are more of an East Coast, it's more of an East Coast brand, then you dip it in the vinegar, and then I've seen people just toss it in their mouth like it's a piece
yeah.
of candy. You want to
uh-huh.
suck it out.
Thank you for telling me that, because yeah. I have had problems with the quick dissolving.
Yeah, you want to get Domino brand, and then there's another brand, and I have it at home. It's a little more expensive, but it's a slower dissolving one as well. But what you want to do is you want to hold that sugar cube and then suck the vinegar out.
Right.
And that way you're not getting this overload of sugar, but you're getting just slightly softened vinegar into your mouth. And you can taste, I think you can taste 8 to 10 vinegars that way before your
right.
you have palate fatigue.
Would you like to try the...
I would love to. So is this, which one are we going to taste?
Now we're going to taste the Merlot.
Okay.
This is the best of show at the Sonoma County.
And that was this year's harvester,
this year.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a very nice vinegar.
Thank
it's
you.
It's very full in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to cough. Vinegar sometimes does that.
At what point does vinegar become balsamic vinegar? I mean, that's a long process.
Balsamic vinegar should take a minimum of about 15 years. And very quickly, the way it's done traditionally, it was done in the attic. So you have this huge fluctuation in the attic in northern Italy. And you had this huge fluctuation in temperature, which means from the winter to the summer, which meant you had a lot of bacteriological activity in the summer months, and then it would slow down. And you had what was called a batteria. And I think it's 11 barrels. Each barrel is smaller than the one before it, and each is made out of a different type of wood. And so you start out with verjus, basically. You start out with grape juice, not fermented into wine, but boiled down, and that goes into the biggest barrel, and then each year concentrated down into the smallest barrel. And then for it to be true Aceto Balsamico Tradizionale, it has to then be approved by the board in Italy, and there are only two bottles that it's allowed to be put in. And it's very, very expensive. So all the stuff you see, balsamic vinegar on the shelves, big bottles, it works fine. It's very good in certain things, but it tends to be red wine vinegar with caramelized sugar and maybe some other spices to sort of mimic the complexity that you get.
It's never been had, huh?
Well, if you paid a lot of money for any of those bigger bottles that you pay a lot of money for, you're probably being had a little bit. But you get some nice flavors, and you're paying, you know, $4.99, $5.99.
I'm heading down to Trader Joe's.
I bought a bottle once for probably for the book tour when I did the oil and vinegar book, and I paid, I think, $247 for 150 milliliters. It wasn't something you would use, like, not even an eyedropper. And it might be that your wife has an appendicitis in the middle of the night, and the doctor comes and does emergency surgery, and he doesn't want money. He wants a bottle of your balsamic vinegar. I mean, this is the old tradition. And one of the things really interesting was it was passed down matriarchal. You know, property was always went through the male heirs, but the batteria and the production of balsamic vinegar was the domain of women, going back to at least the 11th century. It's fascinating. I don't think I've ever done a show on balsamic vinegar, and I should.
So are you planting some away for the? Are you making some? You got some up in the attic there going?
We don't. A lot of people ask us about it, and my answer is, well, we've only been in business 2.5 years, and guess it's a possibility, right?
Yeah, I think the youngest you're allowed to sell it, if I remember correctly, is 20 years.
Wow.
And that's considered very, very young.
Right.
So it's a whole, you know, and there are good ones. The inexpensive ones are fine for what they're for, but that true balsamic vinegar, you would never put it in, you know, a salad dressing. You might put 2 drops into a glass of champagne.
It's pretty obvious you'll never see it either, obviously.
Yeah. Well,
I think
Traversos may have a few bottles. I know they have it at Cordy Brothers. Very high-end markets will have a few bottles in a locked case. But you might, one of the ways that you might enjoy it is a white pizza with, I think it's either Parmigiano or Italian Fontina. And then you take a small eyedropper, and you just drop a few drops on it, and it has so much concentrated flavor. It's really quite amazing.
Interesting.
Okay, let's take another little musical break, and we're going to come back, and we've got one more vinegar to try, we've got some salad to try, and we've got more seafood to talk about here on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Mouthful. That's Van Morrison. Great song. My mouth is still just tingling with that last taste of the Merlot vinegar. Really nice.
Thank you.
I should remind you, we are talking to John Troll of Vivo Vinegar, also Dave LeGros, Bumblebee Seafood. And now I know why it's called Bumblebee. It's the name of your boat.
The FV. I don't want to compete with Bumblebee Fish Sales because they'll be suing me. Mine's the FV, the Fishing Vessel Bumblebee.
Fishing Vessel Bumblebee. And we should say, you reminded me, I think, during our last musical break, to remind everybody that, you know, the markets, except for, I think it's the Santa Rosa markets and the Sonoma market. The markets are going to be closing at the end of November, but that's the end of November, which means the weekend after Thanksgiving, the markets are still open, and it will be your last chance to stock your pantry with some of the things that you really like to have in your pantry if you're used to buying things at the farmer's market. And I'll be talking here on Mouthful about what to do until your local market opens again. But I know Occidental Bohemian Market has already closed for the season. Healdsburg and Sebastopol will be continuing until the end of November. So if you go out shopping that weekend, include your farmers markets as stops. Because
if you get burned out on turkey,
yeah. Yeah, go get some crab.
Yeah, get some crab.
Go get some crab. John, where else? I know I've seen your vinegars in various local markets, but why don't you walk us through where we can find them?
I'm in Pacific Market in Sebastopol and Santa Rosa. We're in the new Whole Foods
in Cottingtown.
And
Oliver's? Traversos.
Traversos,
okay.
Not Oliver's. And then Big John's in Healdsburg. Mm-hmm. Oakville Grocery. Jimtown Store. And Alameda Natural Market.
Oh, great. So branched out a little bit from Sonoma County even.
Right.
Cool. Excellent. So what's this, what are you putting on the salad?
I thought I'd put the Sauve Blanc.
Oh,
a
Sauvignon Blanc vinegar. Now, this is a first for me. I've not had a Sauvignon Blanc vinegar.
It's very good.
I bet. Sauvignon Blanc is a favorite wine.
I talked to one of the judges at the Sonoma County Harvest Fair today, and he was saying it was really a tough call between this one and the Merlot. So.
And I love a good white wine vinegar. It's so important to so many dishes.
So I like to put the olive oil around three times, and then one time with the vinegar. Although I'm giving you a little bit of a bigger dose here because it's really good.
Yeah, you want to spend a spendthrift with the oil and a miser and, with the acid.
And this is my salad that I have every day at Big John's. So it's got
All kinds. It's got some nice tender lettuces.
All kinds of greens.
And you've got one of my favorite things right now, chickpeas, otherwise known as garbanzo beans.
Right. And one of the nice things about...
delicate vinegar. Very delicate.
Any of the wine vinegars, the really good ones, is they leave a nice aftertaste for a good long time.
Yeah, that's really quite a lovely... Lovely vinegar. And I'd say that acid isn't more than 6%, is it?
No.
That's nice. Because you get it, start getting that reaction where your head just sort of snaps back once you get over 6% up into the 6.5 to 7.
Right.
You really have to mitigate it with a lot of fat and a lot of other. Salt is one of the things that will also balance high acid. This is a lovely salad to be eating every day.
And isn't that easy? It's just the olive oil and the vinegar.
Yeah. Well, you know,
simple vinaigrette.
To me, that's salad.
Right.
You know, and it can be nothing more than greens, salt, olive oil, and vinegar. There you go. And if you want to get really fancy, you can put some black pepper on.
Right.
And I eat a variation of that every day.
But you better get to the market early because he sells out early. You've got to get there quick.
Like that.
So are you having a good commercial response as well as good critical response?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are in a position now where we're very small, of course. We have five finished barrels of wine vinegar now. Mm-hmm. So, and this past year, we just doubled our space, so we're expanding a little bit at a time, and we're growing, and we keep saying, let's grow like the vinegar, slowly, but sure. So that's how we're doing.
Yeah, well, I am seeing you in a lot of different places. I'm seeing lots of references, so that's really great. Going to bring you back into the conversation now, Dave. We don't have that much time. You know, time flies on Mouthful because we always have such a good time, especially with all these yummy things to eat. But you fish for crab, you fish for salmon when it's possible to fish for salmon, but you're also a fishmonger, fish broker.
Yes.
Known for your quality.
Yes.
And you work with Jimmy from Gulf Fish, and he is just one of my heroes when with that Gulf oil spill a few months ago. He rallied and did so many fabulous things.
Well, he's a marketer, and he worked for years for a small duck production company out of... the Modesto area, and he branched off on his own. And he brings in these beautiful shrimp from the boat, the Captain Dino. It's on the coast of near New Orleans.
And he brings them in directly.
Yeah. And the fisherman takes them right to the plane and sends them to Jimmy Monday nights and Thursday nights. And then we have them. We have the beautiful shrimp.
Yeah. How many in a pound? Or three or four? I mean, they're huge.
The ones I get are under tens. Sometimes there's actually eight that are so big that there's like 7 or 8 to a pound.
Yeah.
And they make a great broth. I do my cioppino. My cioppino actually has a shrimp broth, and it's very tasty.
Mm-hmm. How do you make your shrimp broth?
Just, you know, the shells. Simmer them for 40 minutes, 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. Does the trick. You know, simple.
Yeah. Okay. It's about how I do mine.
No aromatics or anything, just the good taste.
And you're selling your cioppino at the market?
I sell a cioppino. I do a chowder 1 week and then a cioppino the next. Give people a little break.
You know, tell me about your chowder. What goes into it?
It's all secret. No, it's not vegan. It's basically all decadence. It's all decadence. It's butter and cream and butter bacon cream.
Cream, bacon. There you go.
I like the potatoes to be al dente, so I cook them separate, and I do the, some veggies in there, and I do them separate so they're al dente. I don't want them to be mushy.
How do you cut your potatoes to do it?
Just chunky red potatoes.
You do chunks.
I like them to be country looking. You know, so.
And you better chase it with a little vinegar to clean out the blood vessels.
Just have a nice, simple salad right after.
Right. Actually, if you cook it too long, it'll get vinegary. If you put cream in it, it'll get that lime taste. You know, it'll break down.
Now, you also sell something I buy almost every week, the flounder.
Yes.
Tell us about it. I love that flounder. I'm totally hooked on it.
Well, the flounder are a gray flounder, and they are a byproduct of the shrimp that I get out of the Captain Dino. They catch those in the nets. It's a byproduct. And they actually, Paul Prudhomme, who's a famous chef, everybody knows him in New Orleans, he has a signature dish. So if you Google up gray flounder, you'll see, I believe, that recipe will pop up. It's a broil. He broils it, has a pan of water, and he puts some spices. And, of course, he's the king of spice, so who knows what it is, but some secret spice and very tasty. But that's the gray flounder, well known in the Gulf area.
Yeah.
And people love it.
I love it. Lucas, who's 9, loves it. My daughter Gina, Lucas's mama, she loves it. I love it. And I do something really simple. Salt, pepper, and flour. Fry it in butter. And right at the end, after I turn it over, just before I take it off, I put in some lemon juice. Let that lemon juice steam a little bit. Pull the flounder out. Throw in some more butter. And sometimes, if I feel like opening the refrigerator another time, a handful of capers.
That's
and
a
just
classic.
Throw
That's
that
a classic,
in. Just throw it in. Never look at a recipe. Pour it on top, and maybe have some fried potatoes and steamed sautéed spinach alongside. It's just a beautiful, beautiful
meal. What a
meal.
Coincidence! Because the girl in the fig—that's how they cook it. They
really?
Dust it with Wonder Flour, which doesn't cake. It just gives it a little crunch.
Yeah.
And they do it with the butter, the lemon, and the caper.
Okay, there you go.
And
that's really
they
you
buy
need.
About 60 pounds a week over at the girl in the fig.
I can eat it 2 or 3 nights a week.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, it's outstanding.
And by the way, they don't call, in the South, they don't call the big shrimp prawns. Here in California, people tend to call big shrimp prawns. And
the
Southern person will tell you real quick. Though,
it's a shrimp.
You're right, it's a shrimp.
Yeah.
No matter how big it is.
Is there a difference between a shrimp and a prawn? Is there an actual difference?
So.
I've never found one.
I don't believe so. No.
Do you like to do it, John? Do you like to do anything with vinegar and seafood?
You know, I like seafood by itself, and I think lemon, citrus are all good. I really haven't found anything yet. I'd be interested to see.
A couple Sicilian recipes, or Sicilian techniques, almost a sweet and sour. I've had seafood done in that way, and it can be very nice.
Great.
And there's also some ceviche-style things, I think mostly from South America, that will have vinegar either instead of the citrus or in combination with the citrus.
Ah, okay.
So what are you going to...
I'd like to see some of those recipes.
I'll see what I can find for you. I'll bring you some.
Of course, vinegar goes good with red velvet cakes, too. That's a classic.
That's such a coincidence. I had a red velvet cupcake last night.
Well, my
winter blast.
My daughter and I made red velvet whoopies a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Right? There's something magical about red velvet cake.
Yeah. My wife makes a great... red velvet.
Yeah?
Yeah, sweet and sour is the best. I like taking a peach and putting it in almond oil and browning it, and then putting brown sugar and butter on top, and then sprinkle a little of one of our vinegars on top of that.
Even just if you're cooking outside and you throw some peaches or apricots on the grill after the coals have started to die down, then brown sugar and some vinegar. It's just the best dessert. Really, really good. So when the markets end, are you taking time off? Are you going to fish?
That's it. Done diddy.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're not going to go out crabbing?
Well, I'll crab for
a
few weeks.
You
but,
will.
But it's with a number of pots I have, I basically do it at the markets. And that's my
but you'll go out for a while after, and you'll call up all your best friends and say, hey,
absolutely.
I've got crab.
Absolutely.
Well, that's really good to know. Okay, well, if people want to get a hold of you, you want to tell anybody how to get a hold
of
you?
I'll be at the market through
just
December.
Find you at the market.
And just find me at the market.
Okay.
That's the best way.
And so that's on Sunday at the Town Plaza in Sebastopol, 10 to 1:30.
Yep.
Saturday in Healdsburg, 9 until noon. Yes. It's the corner of Vine and North Streets, right?
Right next over the creek from the mm-hmm. Berry Public.
And it's a, you know, it's an absolutely great market.
Yes.
It's a great market. And so you do those two, and that's it
that's
for
it.
Now.
The Healdsburg Market has a great feel to it.
It does.
It's a community feel. And Sebastopol also.
Yeah, yes. Both different, yes. But really feel like you know you're in Healdsburg when yes. you're at the Healdsburg Market. You know you're in Sebastopol yes. when you're at the Sebastopol Market. And one of the things I love about the Healdsburg Market is that creek there. And you have the sound of water. And I love the
And they're
sound
cleaning
of water.
It all up now. There really there's some projects going
it's looking,
on.
It's looking yeah. really wonderful. Yeah. And so and we can find you at the Santa Rosa Market on right. both Wednesday and Saturday
well,
or just
I'm,
Saturday?
I'm hoping to get into the Santa okay. Rosa Market on Saturdays after okay. November. And then I'll be in the Sonoma Market.
And the Sonoma Market, this is the Friday
That's
one, right?
That's year round. The Friday,
yeah, Friday
one.
Is year round.
Right.
And then will you be in Sebastopol anymore this month?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll be there at the end of the month.
Okay. So. Well, great. And so it's Vivo Vinegar, and it is Fishing Vessel Bumblebee.
FV.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much. It's been really a fabulous and very delicious hour here on Mouthful. Have a great week. Don't forget to visit a farmer's market. If you have any questions about this show or any other shows or suggestions, you can send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net. Or if you're on Facebook, you can just go to Mouthful's Facebook page. You can make a comment or a request there. And I'm pretty good about responding there as well. So have a great week and meet me back here next Sunday for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour here on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa.